The ubiquity of video on the internet gives us lots of chances to see interesting things on screens, often on screens in our hands. But there's still plenty of interest in seeing interesting things on big screens, so we still have films and film festivals. The annual Siskiyou Film Festival returns to Grants Pass High School this weekend with a flock of films on environmental matters lighting up the room. We'll spend the hour talking about the films and their subjects with a particular emphasis on one film about Oregon's most famous wolf. That film is called OR7, The Journey. Morgan Lindsay is the film festival coordinator. She's the outreach coordinator at KS Wild, Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands Center, which is the sponsoring group of the Siskiyou Film Fest. Morgan, welcome back to the studio.
So good to be here, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me on.
Always good to have you. And by phone, we're joined by Clemens Schenk, who's the producer and director of OR7, The Journey. Clemens, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Morgan, let's start with you. When you're not coordinating the film fest, what do you do?
It's different every day, but my role is to connect people with the beautiful place we live. So KS Wild works to protect over 8 million acres of our public rivers, forests, and wildlife. And we help get people out on hikes in the region, and we help people have a voice in how decisions are made on our public lands.
How did the Siskiyou Film Fest get started? There's an interesting history here.
You know, this is our 13th year, and I have to say I'm carrying the torch. Barry Snitkin was the longtime festival organizer, and it got started with the Siskiyou Project, which has now joined forces with KS Wild. And it's one of my favorite events of the year. It's, you know, Grants Pass is just a wonderful community. We get folks coming from all over, Josephine, Jackson counties, even the coast. And we come together for 2 days. It feels like a festival. We'll have food available for purchase. There's over 20 organizations that come and set up booths. So in the middle of winter, it's good to get together and think about the sunny days to come outside.
This actually started as an Ashland festival years ago, didn't it?
That's right. And the first few years were in Ashland, and then it moved to Grants Pass. And you know, we've got some other festivals that happen in Ashland, the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. So there's no shortage of ways to see films celebrating the outdoors with us.
Clemens Schenk, I want to turn to you and talk about OR7, The Journey, but also what precedes it. Tell us about you and your filmmaking, because apparently you've been at it for a while.
Well, yes, I was born and raised in Germany, graduated from film school there, and have been in the business of making documentaries for about 35 years. I spent 10 years in Costa Rica making documentaries and spent 5 years in Talamanca, which is the Caribbean side of Costa Rica, with the Bribri and Cabeca Indians, and made a documentary about them and 8 other ones about the crocodiles, the Monotiti, which is a red-backed squirrel monkey, and various documentaries there.
Has it always been a series of environmental sorts of issues or things about nature?
Yes, they were mostly endangered species issues and pollution issues as far as the crocodiles was concerned. And we kind of specialize in making environmental documentaries.
And you couldn't have picked a more notable subject for OR7. What was your approach to this film?
Well, you know, I started getting little newspaper clippings coming across my desk, and first I didn't pay much attention to it because I knew just about as much about wolves as your average citizen does, which is virtually nothing. But it caught my attention that it consistently came up with OR7 this and OR7 that, and I started collecting these newspaper articles. And at a certain time, I was so enticed by the story that I decided this would be a great subject to make a documentary.
OR7, in fact, I was talking to Morgan as she came into the studio this morning. It's almost like people view OR7 like the family dog in Western Oregon.
Well, OR7 is kind of, I want to say, he's almost like a rock star of the wolves. You know, a woman in the documentary called him the Lewis and Clark of wolves because of going from Northeast Oregon all the way to California. It's quite a task. But what is notable is that he is the first wolf, or he was the first wolf, that set foot into California in almost a century.
That we know about for sure. One of the things we've discovered with, and I'm sure you did it as well while you're working on the documentary, is that that we only know about the ones that actually do have collars on, as OR7 does. And lo and behold, OR7 found that somebody else had followed his footsteps, and a female, and now he's a family man, a family dog, family wolf. See what I mean?
That is correct. And I think we will never know if there were wolves there before, or it could even have been that his mate had been there before instead of following him. We don't know. Because, like you said, OR7 had a collar on. He was collared by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and then dispersed from his pack. But other wolves followed him down there, and we know now there are other wolves in the area. And were there other wolves there before him? Possible. We never know.
Morgan Lindsay, has the presence of OR7 made activity pick up just a bit for environmental groups like Chaos Wild?
Absolutely. So it's... Everyone I talk to about wolves returning to Southern Oregon is really excited to see it happen. So, you know, you have wolves haven't been present in this part of Southern Oregon for over 40 years. As you said, the first wolf to return to California since 1924. So it's been a long silence. And now we have OR7, the rogue pack, as they're calling it, which means that at least two of the pups have survived through the winter, and we're so excited to see it happening.
So a pack and OR7 and OR7's family is certainly a big matter of discussion right now, and the subject of the film OR7, The Journey, that Clemens Schenck will be showing at the Siskiyou Film Fest this weekend. We'll talk more about the other films at the festival as well as the OR7 story when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Morgan and Clemens and your phone calls and emails in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're talking today about the Siskiyou Film Fest and some of the films contained therein. It is this weekend, January 30th and 31st, at the Grants Pass High School Performing Arts Center. KS Wild is the sponsoring group of it. Morgan Lindsay from KS Wild is here with us. She's the festival coordinator as of this year. And filmmaker Clemens Schenck is with us as well. His film is OR7, The Journey. If you have not been under a rock for the last couple of years, you know that OR7 is the name bestowed upon the wolf that is the first to settle in Western Oregon in quite some time, and now the head of the rogue pack, because he found a mate and they produced two cubs who survived through the winter thus far anyway. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the films of the Siskiyou Film Fest, environmental issues more broadly, and OR7 more specifically. 800-838-3760 across the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Give us the lay of land of the Siskiyou Film Fest, if you would, Morgan, and what people can expect if they show up there, and is there anything else quite like this around?
Sure. Well, it's a two-day festival at the Grants Pass High School Auditorium, big, beautiful space where they have the symphony play. And we'll be showing films starting at 6:30 on Friday night, another session on Saturday afternoon starting at 1 o'clock, and then more films Saturday evening at 6:30 again. Doors open at 5:30. We'll have food available for purchase with Kevin Gillette Catering, yummy barbecue chicken sandwiches and veggie wraps. Like I mentioned, we'll have over 20 different conservation and nonprofit groups tabling in the lobby. Happy to talk to you about how you can get more involved.
You win the prize. You said the verb tabling first. It seems to be the new one now. I'd actually written that down in my question, but they will be tabling afterwards. So what are some of the people who are bringing tables and booths to the
sure.
Film Fest?
We've got a wide variety, everything from KS Wild, of course, to Friends of the Calmeopsis, to Southern Oregon Climate Action Now and Rogue Climate, folks who can talk to you about getting solar panels up on your house, Renewable Solar Works, lots of different organizations.
How has the film festival grown over the 13 years it's been in existence?
It's really been a journey. So from just, you know, a single night showing in Ashland, I think here at SOU, to now a full two-day festival in Grants Pass, and then we take it on the road. I think we're going to head to Crescent City this year and get it out to those folks out there. So it's really, it's a wonderful event. I think film has this amazing ability to inspire and transport. So even if you're not going to have the chance to make it deep into the heart of the Kalmiopsis wilderness, you can come to the film festival and journey there with us together.
What are some of the other films then that are screening in addition to OR7, The Journey?
So Friday night, we kick off the night with a short film just released by local filmmaker Darren Campbell. It's called Emerald Waters of the Klamath Siskiyou Wild Rivers. So this takes us, as I mentioned, into the South Kalmiopsis. So if you've ever headed out in the Illinois River Corridor east of Cave Junction in Selma, you journey into this land of red rock and mineral-rich soil, Port Orford cedar, Darlingtonia fens hanging down canyon walls.
Things that are found nowhere else on the earth.
Things that are found nowhere else on the earth, and a region that's threatened by nickel strip mining. So we take a look at how special the place is and how important it is to protect it from this mining threat. So that kicks off the Friday, and then we take a look at proposed fossil fuel exports across the Pacific Northwest, including the liquefied natural gas terminal, Jordan Cove Pacific Connector pipeline. And then that takes us to intermission, and then we come back for OR7, The Journey, which is our feature film on Friday.
All right, so the film you just mentioned about exports of fossil fuels is Momenta, is that right?
That's right, Momenta, and it really focuses in on coal trains coming from the Powder River Basin in Wyoming out through the Columbia River Corridor in Washington. But it also highlights, you know, what a big push there is to export fossil fuels throughout the Pacific Northwest, including LNG, liquefied natural gas.
And Saturday's session is the afternoon session is The Human Experiment and Wrenched.
That's right. The Human Experiment takes us sort of inside the human body to look at the effects of lots of different chemicals that are now present in our environment. And then Wrenched is a bit of a historical piece that looks at the legacy of Edward Abbey, one of the West's most beloved writers and agitators, you could say. And that takes us into Saturday night, where we have a short film about the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, when Lyndon B. Johnson, back in 1964, thought it was a good idea that we set aside some beautiful places for to be as they are. And then that takes us into Forever Wild, our feature film on Saturday night.
Now, this is one that's got the name Robert Redford attached to it. I see Forever Wild. In fact, it says right on the poster, Forever Wild with Robert Redford.
Absolutely. He's a big name in the conservation movement, and for this film, he narrates along with Terry Tempest Williams, well known for her writings about the Utah desert, and tells us that behind every place that's been protected, every national park, every national monument like our own Oregon Caves, recently expanded, you have a group of people who worked so hard to protect it. So that it takes us to a couple case studies across the United States looking at our national parks.
And then you finish up with Disruption, is that right?
That's right. Again, bringing it back to our changing climate and how our times are calling for people to stand up and be counted and come together to find new solutions.
As I look at the organization of the festival, and I'm not sure if this is your choice or if it's done by committee or something, it looks like what you're trying to do here is build passion through the course of the films, that by the time the Saturday night session is over, people are ready to go out and do something.
You hit right on it, Jeffrey. Our theme is igniting passion for the natural world. So come on out and be inspired.
Now, as I look at The Human Experiment, I see there's an involvement actually from Sean Penn with that particular film.
There is. He's a big name, and he's gotten really involved in this issue. It's really laudable.
And so, Clemens Schenck, you've got a lot of good company here from people who have big names. As you think about your approach to OR7 and your own fascination with what led you to make your film, OR7, The Journey, what was the approach you ended up choosing?
Well, we wanted to tell a story not only about this one wolf, but we wanted to use this animal as a vehicle, so to speak, to educate the general public about the plight of the wolf and clarifying the myth and misconceptions that surround these magnificent animals. You know, they had been delisted a long time ago in 1973. Richard Nixon put the wolf back on the endangered species list. And we felt there was a lot of misinformation out there, of myths and speculations that weren't true. And so it became, it started with a project, but it became a passion as we were going along. Of course, we had some obstacles. You know, we had no video, we had no photos of this particular animal. And so we decided we have to have a standing wolf. And that was one of our biggest hurdles, to find an animal that kind of looked like him and that we could film in an enclosure where everybody was safe. And we found this animal in Idaho at Wolf People of Kokalala, a wolf by the name of Neva. And when I saw these animals, they had 25 wolves. I saw him and I said, that is my wolf. That is the animal I want for the movie.
So you have a charismatic wolf, in essence, playing a charismatic wolf.
That is correct. You know, he's kind of a clown at some times. but he fit the description so well, and he worked with us so well that it was a pleasure. We had a lot of times. We made several trips up there because we had to feature different times of the year, such as summer, fall, winter, in order to really, you know, portray the actual journey and the actual times during the journey of OR7 to California.
We're talking about some of the films at the Siskiyou Film Fest with an emphasis on OR7, The Journey. Clemens Schenck is the producer and director of that work, and it's one of several films. Was it 9 altogether? At the Siskiyou Film Fest, we also have Morgan Lindsay in the studio with us from the festival, from Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center, the sponsoring organization. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We can talk about the content of the films. We can talk about films more broadly. We can talk about environmental issues more broadly at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760, or jx@jeffnet.org. Clemens, as I was looking for at the credits of OR7, The Journey, this morning, I did notice a writer credit. So this is a, I mean, this is not the sort of thing, obviously, you didn't go out and look for the real OR7. So how is the story constructed?
Well, the story was constructed. I have a screenwriter, an old friend of mine for many, many years, who lives down in Laguna Beach, Southern California, and also a score composer. And so it was constructed by us first taking, like, what we call B-roll, and developing a story, a storyline of what we wanted to do. And we knew we had to fill a lot of holes because, like I say, there were things that we didn't know and nobody knew. We just knew the general track of this wolf because he was collared and he had a radio signal. And we talked to the Department of Fish and Wildlife and had several interviews with wolf experts. And we knew about the route he was going. So we developed this story of saying, okay, this is what we want to accomplish. How do we go about it? And my writer, you know, drew up a draft, and we looked at it and said, yeah, this will work. This is what we're going to have to change. And it came together like in little pieces of a puzzle, so to speak. And as we were going along, we found out more and more and more. We contacted Oregon Wild, and Rob Clavins from Oregon Wild put me in contact with some very important and interesting people who there was a woman, for example, who had an encounter with OR7. And, of course, that's always a great thing to see and to feature in a film, and it makes it that much more interesting. We wanted to mix adventure with, you know, the documentary, but also education was our main objective here. And we really plan to bring this movie in the future into schools and possibly have it part as a curriculum.
What you mentioned that you're one of the 80%, or were certainly when you got started, of people who don't know very much about wolves, and maybe the number's actually a little low there, but what was the biggest misconception that you found, either in yourself or in society at large, about wolves?
Well, I think the biggest misconception is, and I want to just say it, the big, bad wolf. Okay, that is just a huge misconception coming out of fairy tales, out of medieval times, from Europe. Europeans brought these stories with them. And the wolf was actually at one time a friend of people in Europe, and Benny became a competitor to royalty who was starting to hunt, and they saw the wolf as a competitor and started to kill wolves because they wanted to bring down the game, and they didn't allow the wolf to do that. And, you know, of course, these game animals are the main food source and prey of wolves.
I remember it was an audio work by Robert Redford in the early 70s that that kind of set me straight on knowledge about the wolves, that they are not as often portrayed in popular fiction. Yet I was a little surprised to find, I think it was actually Frozen, the animated movie, that showed the wolves as menacing the people in the dark of night out there in the snow. Is this something that you're dealing with on a regular basis at KS Wild, Morgan?
Sure. Wolves have a big reputation in our imagination. Right, there's Little Red Riding Hood, there's the Big Bad Wolf. And in reality, wolves are, they're social animals. They stick with their pack, and they really, it takes a lot for them to go after prey. There has been no known occasion of a wolf ever killing a human being. They really, you know, if there's people around, they don't want to be there. It's if you're scared of them, they're more scared of you. And, you know, I saw a billboard recently that I think said number of people killed by lightning, you know, 22 last year, number of people killed by wolves, 0. So we have this, they have an outsized place in our imagination, when in reality they play a really key role in the ecosystem. They have an immensely important role as a keystone predator. So when they're present in the landscape, they help keep everything in balance. And when they're missing, it creates a big hole. You get overpopulations of deer and elk, leading them to overgraze along streams and rivers. It really has a cascading effect down to affect everything from songbirds to beavers. And so when they're restored, as we've seen in Yellowstone, you get wolves returning, and then you get it just increases the diversity of all life around them.
Morgan Lindsay from KS Wild and Clemens Schenck, the filmmaker, are our guests here on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about wolves in the Siskiyou Film Fest. In particular, the example you just gave about streams, I remember hearing, and we've talked a couple of times on the program about this, about the changes to stream banks themselves in Yellowstone in particular when wolves were reintroduced there.
Yes. So what you see is when wolves are returned to the landscape, they do, you know, kill a certain number of deer and elk for food, but they also change the deer and the elk's behavior. So rather than those animals being able to hang out in the meadows and eat all the young aspen trees that are growing up in the stream banks, they're forced to move around a little bit more, keeps them healthier, and means that the stream has vegetation along both sides, this streamside forest. It anchors the bank. It creates forage for beavers who fell trees, create dams, and then you get all kinds of other animals, amphibians, frogs, songbirds, coming in to the newly restored streamside forest.
Which is a big difference for one animal not being there.
It's amazing.
Being put back into the system, sure.
I think it was John Muir said you tug on one thing in the universe and you find it's connected to everything else.
This is an interesting time for us to be having this discussion about wolves, because there was news that came down just yesterday about the numbers of wolves in breeding pairs in Oregon, and it indicates that there actually are enough breeding pairs now that there might be some changes in protections for wolves and how they can be approached by farmers and ranchers, for example, who don't like wolves getting near their livestock. What's the story there, Morgan?
We heard yesterday from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that we do have 7 confirmed breeding pairs in Oregon, and this is a big change. 10 years ago, there were no wolves in Oregon, so it's been a remarkable recovery, and it's still in the very early stages. You know, OR7 and his family, the Rogue Pack, have just been here in Southern Oregon for 1 year. But according to the rules for how wolves are managed in the state of Oregon, this change with 7 breeding pairs takes us to phase 2, which essentially means that the state has more flexibility in how it manages wolves. So non-lethal control, for example, putting up certain kinds of fencing and flags to keep the wolves away from known livestock areas. And rules for how ranchers need to deal with, you know, maybe dead or dying animals who must be buried so that it doesn't attract the wolves. near the other livestock. Those rules are all still in place, but it also gives a little bit more flexibility. It relaxes. It allows the possibility for lethal control of wolves if there were to be a certain number of livestock killed within, you know, say, a six-month period.
Now, right now, the way that the rules read, it really is a caught in the act kind of thing, isn't it, where a rancher needs to catch a wolf actually preying upon livestock in person?
So the rules are fairly simple. Right now, there has to be proof that they call it a depredation, so that if a wolf did in fact attack a livestock animal, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife will go and investigate that incident, and they will rule and say, yes, this was likely a carnivore attack, or it was, you know, death by some other cause. And when that's determined, if a certain pack of wolves has, you know, more than one depredation against them, then they're able to sort of take action in that way. But most wolves, you know, stay pretty far away from livestock. We haven't had too many depredations in the state of Oregon.
Much more to talk about wolves, about Clemens Schenck's movie about OR7, OR7 The Journey, and about the Siskiyou Film Fest, all topics for discussion here on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take a short break and come back with Morgan and Clemens and you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guests today are Morgan Lindsay, who's the coordinator of the Siskiyou Film Fest coming to Grants Pass Friday and Saturday, and she's with KS Wild, the sponsoring group. Clemens Schenck is a filmmaker, joins us by phone. He is the producer and director of OR7 The Journey, one of the films featured at this weekend's Siskiyou Film Fest. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about the film fest, its contents, OR7, and wolves a little more broadly, or environmental issues more broadly as well. Phone number here on the exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760, or email jx@jeffnet.org. So we were just talking, coming into the break, Morgan, about potential changes in rules. These changes have not happened yet in rules of engagement with livestock or with wolves over livestock predation.
In fact, we just heard from Fish and Wildlife yesterday that we are now entering phase two. So the rules that have been in place, you know, Oregon's a big state, and most of the wolves that are present are in the far northeastern corner. The only wolves we know about here in southern Oregon are the Rogue Pack, and then two wolves who were just spotted near Keno, Oregon, which is near Klamath Falls. So it's really exciting to see that. And wolves are managed differently in the far eastern part of the state than in the western part. So we're talking about the rules for the eastern part of Oregon, and they're moving from you know, it's triggered by how many wolves are present in the state. We believe right now to be 64 wolves. Again, that's up from zero 10 years ago. And we'll get final numbers later this month. And what those rules do is it just changes the flexibility. So right now, you know, ranchers and livestock managers are entitled to replacement funds for any livestock that are injured or killed by wolves. And there's a robust process for determining if that was in fact the case or if it was another cause of death.
Clemens Schenck, did you get the rancher, the not particularly happy about wolf viewpoint represented in OR7, The Journey?
We touched on the issue very lightly because we didn't want to make a really highly political movie. But here's my thought on that, and that is a lot of this ranching is done on public lands. And when you pay $1.35 per head of cattle to graze on public land, you know, grazing on public land is a privilege. It is not a right. And this land belongs to everybody. And when you have your cattle on this public land, you have to take in consideration certain losses, and that includes losses by predators such as the wolf.
I'm curious, since you mentioned doing a lot of your shooting in Idaho, where you had a captive wolf that you could use instead of OR7, you had to travel a long way just to be able to shoot the film, but I'm still wondering how widely known the story of OR7 is, that if it took really no time of explanation at all, say we're doing a film about OR7, and people went, oh yeah, I know who that is.
Well, basically, that's how it is. And it started very early. Like I say, when I started getting these newspaper reports, I all of a sudden saw reports on the internet come in from Holland and from Europe and from France, from Germany, countries in Europe. And that is what actually motivated me to make this movie. You know, it was something special. We traveled a total of 30,000 miles over 4 states, Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and California, to shoot this movie. And it took us about 2.5 years to do so. Like I say, Idaho was a main target for us because we had our wolf there, and we didn't want to put unnecessary pressure on an animal or stress on an animal and have it transported. So we went there several times, and it was a very pleasurable experience.
Did you work that wolf Neva pretty hard? Because you have you're recreating essentially OR7's long, long, long distance journey, right?
Yeah, we actually did not. We were in a 5-acre enclosure, and we just said, let this wolf do what he normally does. We just let him run. And we followed him, and, you know, it took a lot of patience, of course, and a lot of time to set up cameras and film this wolf. And most of the time, I want to say, when we expected him to come from a certain direction, he came from the opposite direction, and we had to kind of turn around and change our angle. So it was a patience game. That we did not in any way manipulate this wolf to go a certain way or to do certain things because, like I say, we feel it is unnecessary to put stress on an animal like that.
We have a phone call. Let's go to Tony in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about wolves. We're talking about OR7 specifically and about the Siskiyou Film Fest with Morgan Lindsay and Clemens Schenck. Welcome, Tony.
Hi. I was wondering if they ever thought of the fact that coyotes and wolves are in direct competition for the same food.
Uh-huh.
Now, we have a lot of coyotes around this area, and they keep the deer population well knocked off. Them and the cars.
Yeah. All right, so you're just saying the coyotes are enough. We don't necessarily need wolves. Is this the place you're leading?
Well, let's put it this way. I'd rather get rid of the coyotes than... At this point in time, the wolves, because the coyotes they kill for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, but that is a direct competition, and the coyotes were after the wildlife, which kept them moving around and everything. So, they thought about that?
All right, let's take it up. Thanks for the question, Tony. Appreciate that. Morgan, what can you tell us about your knowledge about coyotes and wolves and what they're going after?
So I am not a biologist. I'm an advocate. So I'm going to trust the scientists on this one who say that there is a delicate balance in nature between predators, prey, and other predators. And what you see the science telling us is that when wolves are allowed to return to the landscape, you get beneficial effects in terms of balance between all different species of animals. And in fact, the science also says that allowing wolves to maintain their really tight-knit social structure. You have a pack of wolves with an alpha female and an alpha male who are the breeding pair, and they essentially sort of work to keep the whole pack moving in harmony. And so when you do see lethal control or killing of wolves in response to perhaps, you know, livestock depredations, what you find is you can almost predict an increase in livestock killed because the pack will then separate if the alpha male and female aren't allowed to sort of stay together and keep the rest of the pack in line.
Like self-regulation of the pack, in a sense.
Exactly. It's a really fascinating branch of study, and KS Wild's hoping to bring maybe some scientists to Southern Oregon to talk more about this issue because it's not widely understood.
All right, let's take another email here. Here's Mike in Medford wants to know about when there'll be a film about the restoration of the grizzly bear to the wilderness of Southern Oregon. Just hoping, he says.
We can only dream. As far as I know, there haven't been any grizzly bears making it this far south, but you never know.
Let us take a call. Here's Wally in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Morgan Lindsay and Clemens Schenk.
Hi. I just wanted to provide a little more info on wolves in southwest Oregon. There has been a wolf down around Keno, which was reported a month or so ago.
Yeah, Morgan just got that in, too.
Mm-hmm. Extremity of the rogue pack territory, but now there's been confirmed a companion, a black wolf, who's also in the same area. They're apparently a pair. So there's potentially already a second pack that could be formed by next spring, or perhaps by this spring, if they have puppies, which they would normally do about the middle of April.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for the input there, Wally. Appreciate that, which raises the possibility then, too, that we could see wolves in the wild in California on a regular basis again. Keno's very close to the state line, although the Klamath River is a bit of an obstacle there. But now the reason, I mean, we should get back to this now, one of the reasons that we have wolves in Oregon in the first place is because they did, in fact, swim the Snake River or cross it on ice or both.
It's amazing. Yeah. You think about a river, and we get across them right by bridges on highways. But if you're standing at the bank of, say, the Rogue River, and you're looking about how to get across, it is. It's a major obstacle for wolves and other animals that are dispersing. So it's really an incredible feat.
Let's take another call. We have Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Morgan Lindsay and Clemens Schenk.
Oh, hello. Thank you. One of my favorite subjects. I love the animal, the wolf. And I have a Siberian Husky that is part wolf. Very little, but I've noticed in his lifetime, and he's 11 now, and he still is always on patrol. He manages the neighborhood, and I learned from him just observing, and I've read somewhat, but I'm not an expert. You know, I can see how he breaks down the scent of other animals and is constantly defining territory and boundaries. And even just this week, there's a female in heat in our neighborhood, actually in my home. That's how I know. It's my roommate's pet. And so her scent has been dispersed around the neighborhood because she goes and walks and she pees. And my dog, I always would observe him following these scents and smelling every blade of grass, even now that he's been fixed. So he just knows. There's a knowingness. And I think that could be a way that perhaps OR7 and his mate what found each other is that OR7 was relentless on looking for a scent, and those periodic scents that females leave, and then, of course, they're gone because the period ends. So there's that, and then the breakdown of the forest. I noticed him breaking down sticks and twigs and blades of grass and all kinds of things where there may be scent, and I just think, In the forest, that's helping to build the forest floor, breaking down all these twigs and opening up the areas. And so that's just my human observation.
All right. Thanks very much for that, Julie. Appreciate that. Clemens Schenk, I'm reminded that you mentioned starting on OR7, the journey, 2.5 years ago. So obviously more than halfway through that time period was when we discovered that OR7 had, in fact, found a mate. And had settled down and had pups. Did that change what you did with the movie?
No, it did not. In fact, it coincided with our premiere on May 25th at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Shortly before that, I think it was just a few days before that, we found out that he had found a mate, and the hope was that they were going to produce pups. And then later on, we found out they did have three puppies. And, you know, we believe in the end, wolves will end up in California. And wolves will be in southwest Oregon. They're not going to be introduced there, but they will be coming from Idaho. And there is this theory that wolves sometimes will follow a very old trail, like it has been in Missoula in Montana, where wolves traveled far distances to this particular place, and there was one wolf, and then there was another wolf, and there was another wolf, and they came to a very, very good habitat where they could live, but they ended up in the same place. So the theory is that they might follow some old scent long forgotten thing and end up in the same place. And I believe that eventually they will end up in California, and California is a good place for them to be.
It's a pretty amazing story about how far OR7 had to travel, and I was corrected recently, didn't actually get into Nevada, but pretty close at one point, as I understand, but the long-distance travel, hundreds of miles, essentially, and that yet found a mate. Now, I don't want to just limit this to OR7. We're getting short on time here, too, and I want to make sure that we give a little time to the other films. So can you see, Morgan Lindsay, all of the films in the Siskiyou Film Fest? They're all on the same screen, right? So there's no overlap?
Yes. So all films will be shown at the Grants Pass High School Auditorium on Friday, January 30th, this Friday, and Saturday, January 31st. So just a $15 ticket gets you into the whole show, or we've got a really special deal going on right now. If you join KS Wild as a member for $35, you get two free passes to the Film Fest, a $30 value. So it's a screaming deal. $10 for students and seniors, and then kids 18 and under get in free. We do have one young high school student in Grants Pass who's won the youth film competition, so he will get to have his film shown on the big screen. We're just about to release that name later today. And it's going to be a wonderful 2 days of insight and exploration, so you don't want to miss it.
Which session will the student film be shown at?
Saturday night.
Okay, so along with Forever Wild, Disruption and the Wildest Act?
That's correct.
The student film as well. Is this a major fundraiser for KS Wild?
You know, we cover our costs, but it's really, you know, about connecting with the community and giving our sponsors a chance to connect with everyone there.
All right, if the Siskiyou Film Fest runs Friday and Saturday at the Grants Pass High School Performing Arts Center. Morgan Lindsay is the festival coordinator. Clemens Schenk is the producer and director of OR7, The Journey. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right.
Thank you.
You bet. Take care.